All right. Thank you, everyone, for coming. It's good to have you. So here we are, August 2021. And as you've seen, as we've talked about at the beginning of the year, the first thing to note is the obvious one. In spite of the hopeful pause that people were seeing in May and June, believing that the COVID crisis was over, we said, as far as you know, we were concerned that it looked like it was going to go the whole year. And as you can see, the resurgence has happened, and infection is again racing out of control. So we just want to acknowledge the COVID crisis is still going to be with the world for approximately the next 8 months. It'll begin a more serious decline after the Delta variant runs its course, which will be about 4 to 5 months. And because one of the interesting sidelines, even though this is very infectious and a very fast spreading one, it's also one that leaves an immunity actually rather quickly. So when that happens, the next round of the Lambda variant will be up, and that has some interesting ramifications for later on in 2022 and then through 2023 and 24. So in any case, just having said that, we wanted to start off because, of course, for most of you who are here tonight, many of you are sequestered away in self quarantine, feeling a little bit of the grief at the fact that while there was an opening, you know, now it's seemingly starting to close up again. All right, now why some of these things have happened? As you may recall, just a brief recap: the Overleaves for this year, as we talked about, it is a server cast artisan. And it's an artisan year with a lot of feminine energy. And there was a lot of Overleaf changes that happened early on that we mentioned in the second quarter. But now all those Overleaves are in full play. So the Overleaves that are in full play now, again, are the artisan in with a server cast, meaning whatever you create needs to help, needs to be of help, needs to be helpful, and needs to be for more than just the self. It is now the goal of growth. So there is expansionary energy out there, but because it's such high feminine energy, and this year follows the Great Suspension, as we said, it's a feeling of growth that is meandering, and feeling in the same way that if you were to take a water pitcher and just pour its contents on the ground and watch it just spread out in every direction, it doesn't necessarily seem like it's done anything worthwhile. However, it has done, it is doing things that are worthwhile. And from that standpoint, it also has to, but it doesn't have a predictable or a noticeable influence or course right at the moment. The mode is perseverance. And of course, many of you are feeling that. You're feeling perseverance predominantly in the negative pole, which is monotony. The sense of boredom or the sense of repetition, the sense of inability to do anything different than what you've been doing over the last 16 months. It doesn't mean that many of you haven't utilized your time well and taken yourselves internally. And by internally, we not only mean into your own spiritual or psychological realm, but internally into your own homes and into your own lives and restructuring some of the things that you do. Perhaps either initiating or reinstituting things that you used to once enjoy doing. And for those of you who have, by the way, have done that, that's certainly not the majority, but for those, it is a large minority that has done that. And for those who have, you're finding yourself actually able to weather a lot of the circumstances that are present a lot more effectively than most people. So your persistence, positive pole, instead of, you know, succumbing to monotony, is really a key measure of how to keep yourself from going stir crazy or from finding yourself just sinking into depression. And those are a key message. Now, tonight, some of the things that we wanted to mention and are the three Overleaves that are up, and we're going to be discussing the most because they are the most relevant at this point. And we're talking about the attitude of cynic, the instinctive center, which this year is, and the key feature of greed. Now, by the way, if folks, if all of you who are, some of you just coming on, aren't muted, I'm going to mute you now. So that, at least hopefully you'll be muted. There we go. And so we don't have a lot of background distraction. Thank you. All right. So getting back to this now, for some of you who read some of our, advertising information, promotional information about this. We talked about the goal, the attitude of cynic as being a particularly powerful this year for a few reasons. Number one, the attitude of cynic of all the seven attitudes is probably the one that jolts the intellectual center back into a reset, more harshly, mind you, but definitely more than any other of the attitudes. And one of the ways we phrase that is we said that cynicism has had to come back around and sink in, particularly in a lot of old soul psyches who naturally tend to want to be either spiritualistic or idealistic, you know, trying to up-level or avoid circumstances or put the best spin on it and that sort of thing. There's nothing wrong with that kind of thing, but it does get a person bogged down in beliefs. Now, what cynicism is, of course, it is the warrior attitude. And in the negative pole, of denigration, the warrior, you know, goes after everything that seems fluffy or irrelevant or dumb to it. It may do it, you know, with a hammer smash, or it may go to it with an incredibly precise level of positive pole, verbal and intellectual agility. Now, the positive pole is often called argument, but rather than use the word argument, which has connotations of, you know, fighting and disagreement and that sort of thing, we're going to use the word debate. We're going to use the word debate because to debate means at least you can have a conversation. It may be spirited, it may be rousing, it may be verbally very caustic, but in real debate, people are not just throwing insults. They are wielding out facts and putting them out to say, all right, this is how this stands up. Now, we bring this to you, first of all, as we said, we're going to have you think about that individually. So we're just sprinkling that on the top of the water as the first pass at cynicism. Next thing we want to talk about is the instinctive center. Now, the instinctive center of 2021 is quite different in many ways from instinctive center years of before. First of all, one of the ways that it's different is that you've heard many of our channels often characterize when used with the word instinctive center year as a review. Well, in many ways, this is not about review. This is about reprogramming. Now, this instinctive center comes right on the heels of 2019 and 2020. 2019 was a disintegration of a lot of the old, the standard socialized ways of thinking about things. Last year came along the Great Suspension and pulled out from underneath everyone's feet, so to speak, all the standard habits, rituals, ways of doing things, let alone daily circumstances that you all had basically participated in, you know, for most of your adult lives. And in that great suspension, then many of you have at first feeling the fear of the, oh my God, what's going to happen, having it slide into, all right, well, there is a kind of a Cold War feeling of, now we don't know what happened, but you're not in panic about it. And then it slid into, well, what can I do with myself? And so some of you in having that rearrangement or had a disintegration happen, And in that disintegration, then things became, you know, they fell out of your life, or once again, they began to be movable. Using, you know, Mr. Hemingway's, you know, reference to a movable feast, you might say, you know, you had movable awarenesses of how things, you know, how your life looks different when you didn't have to go to work every day, or you didn't go out of your front door every day at the same time. And how all of a sudden you had this time all availed back to you. Well, in this year, then, after all that disintegration and disillusionment, the instinctive center has opened up all its parts, which is the, you know, the intellect, which is your mind, which is about your beliefs, your emotions, which have to do with your connections to, you know, both your those things you love and you hold in esteem, as well as those things you hold in terror and traumas, and the moving part of the instinctive center, which is the place where there has been any of your physical habits body conditions that you have lived with during your life, or at least a better part of your life, all are up and can be, you know, confronted and dealt with and even expunged. So this reprogramming period then comes in the, you know, comes side by side with this cynic energy that says, okay, and this artisan energy, which says, okay, artisan, we want to create. Server says, we want it to help everybody, including yourself, yes, but no more of this only greed, all right, which is why the chief feature of greed is so prominent as an intervening feature. Because you can see socially, lots of people are trying to just grab on and say, this is mine, and hold on for dear life, especially those who already have a lot. And those who have a lot, of course, are the ones that are, you know, have most of the power as individuals or groups of individuals to affect things. Well, cynicism is coming out of the closet to call bullshit, you know, to put it in an informal vernacular. And in a little while, we'll talk about a couple of layered ideas that we want you to consider in you know, your evaluation of the modern day sense of complexity that you face in the world. Informal is one of them, and public versus private will be another one, and we'll get back to that as we continue. So again, recapping here, the three overleaves that we've been saying, perseverance is on its way, and many of you are either writing things out or actually using it to try to put your shoulder into some new ways of being. And we really emphasize that, ways of being more than necessarily doing things. Because in this time, you know, when we said you're reprogramming your instinctive center, you're literally going to be putting in new, you know, kind of looking at old truths and putting in some new truths. And yes, truths, we said. And like, imagine the analogy, and as you've heard us say before, metaphysics is best often said as metaphors. Think about, you are a circuit board. Your instinctive center is a circuit board that your essence built and installed in this personality when it was born. Well, now you're at a period where you can actually go in and swap out some of the chips on that circuit board. And in doing that, the best way to do it is to really test them hard. And cynicism is a hard tester. Now, the difficulty that cynicism can bring to most people is that almost automatically, even though cynicism, you know, tends to challenge intellectual beliefs, it's, of course, rattling the cage of your emotions and the habits that those emotions are attached to. Now, those habits can be, you know, your particular favorite addictions. In the case of, you know, greed, that's one of the things that is really always, always there to be reminding of. Because greed tells you that any self-indulgence you do is equal to self-care. And get that equation. the tendency for greed is to delude people into believing that, oh, if you just have that that new thing, or if you have that extra bit of comfort, or if you just take that extra little indulgence, that's the same thing as being nice to yourself. And in actuality, what cynicism would say is, that's nonsense. That's the self-delusion aspect of the artisan in play. What real self-care is, actually takes the use of perseverance, and that means effort. So there may be some things here when you come away from this talk today that when you do your evaluation of things that you may be finding that you're having to effort into. They're not comfortable. They're not easy. That you're having to push on. And we want you to know that's an indication you're actually doing it right. One of the great misnomers that cynicism will start to pump out into the world is many of the very, very lofty ideals of the last 40 years, whether they have been in the New Age movement or in the human potential movement or capitalism itself, you know, of how everything just goes your way if you just do it right, whatever right is. And that has been a delusion to pump people up to actually engage in conformity. Because then if people picked up the rallying cry and then bought all the products and did all the things and followed the right guru and did all the methods, then surely somehow they're going to get the benefits. Well, what we want to say about that is again, that has been the selling of ideals. And when a cynicism year comes along, it's going to challenge you to look at your own ideals and say which ideals were fluff and stuff. In other words, negative pole built on naivete, but also on wishful thinking, where there was a built-in avoidance involved. Because greed will say, never deprive yourself of anything. In fact, take it from the next guy if you need to. And what real self-care sometimes requires is selective managing of your energy. So at some moments, at some times, it's not self-deprivation. It's really self-reservation. It's structuring the times that you give. It's structuring what you take and also mounting exertion when necessary. So, let's talk more a little bit more about the influences of greed and what you might be experiencing for yourselves. Some of you who have found that you have really glommed onto the reality that the only real commodity that you have in your life is your time. And you've heard us repeat this message several times in several presentations. For those of you who are aware of that, who have really glommed on it, who have begun to value your time above all other things, will probably experience yourself as actually having more genuine sense of joy and feelings of satisfactions for longer periods of time. Especially if you know that you are then spending that time. And we emphasize that word spending because in greed, in the chief feature of greed, one of the, you know, historically and in socially, most of the ways you talk about greed is, you know, those who expend their resources, right? And you think about that kind of thing as a, and the acquisition of commodities and things. For those of you who've done that, and for those of you who can take advantage of how you become aware of your time, and what you do with your time, again, you're going to find that you're going to experience it even in this very tumultuous period where not only you as individuals, but society is pulling out its chips, so to speak, and reevaluating things and looking for reprogramming. In some cases, like, you know, in a mad dash and with no real seeming order. And of course, you know, in many societies around the world, you see that, but you also see that on the earth itself, which is subjects we'll talk about, you know, in this talk. In any case, if you do that, if you're able to give yourself that, then your feelings of the interesting part about it is the positive experience, that desire of in the positive pole of greed ultimately wants is to fill that sense of nurturance and self-satisfaction. That's the positive hope, but it's doing so from a, if you will, a psychology of lack, of shortfall, of scarcity. And right now, there is a lot of messages in the world, and in fact, a lot of valid facts in the world that say there are things that are scarce. And what's happening is that for those who don't acknowledge the scarcity and thereby cherish what they have and utilize with greater value and greater attention to detail what they do have, thereby giving them more real satisfaction. Instead, they will go. They will drop into, the hoarding behavior and craziness of feeling like there's not enough, and then that grabbing and that kind of anxiety that can come out of trying to go after and scrounge for things. Cynicism then is going to constantly ask you. And this is what it's going. This is why it's important for you to understand. Being cynical is not a bad thing. Cynicism has a bad reputation because it's often confused with unrealistic pessimism. The doubting Thomas, Murphy's Law, all negativity. And that's not what cynicism is to do. Cynicism is like the mason who goes at a piece of granite and hammers on it until whatever loose rock has been there falls away, until the rock won't chip anymore. But what's left is a solid, founded, grounded reality. And those things you can take in most of the well-founded historic scientific and mathematical truths to start off your thinking. And we want to be really clear when we say that, folks. We're not suggesting that any of you become the, if you will, religious adherence to science, but rather that the whole fundamental evolution of humankind in the intellectual center has produced the scientific method of critical thinking. And it's critical thinking that you're being asked to engage in. And useful debate and the presentation of facts, but also finding out when somebody can't present a fact and instead they're just shoving in, you know, a cherished belief or a defended position that they hold, then you can say, okay, well, do you want to stop here or do you want to investigate? And for those of you who dive into the goal of growth then and are willing to do, you know, growth is ultimately expansionary, but it's not necessarily directional. As we gave you the analogy before, growth expands everywhere. That's why, like in the negative pole of growth, you have cancer. Well, guess what? Growth is happening in this pandemic. And one of the ways that it's showing is by virtue of the fact of the new and rampant rise in infections. And what the growth is giving people the experience that their beliefs do not stop biology. And it's one of the important lessons of, you know, from this point forward in your existence, since many of you here are over the age of 50, many of you over 60, and some of you in your 70s. For the rest of your days, your best contribution is to be literally a stalwart model of clear presentation of critical thinking to those who you encounter. To assert with questions, but also inspire by modeling what it is to deduce facts and to ask questions when you know or when you can tell something is unfactual, to find things out, to get the answers, Because the more you can do that, the more instinctively you will feel secure in yourself. And also, the more you will be contributing to grow to truth's existence in the world. One of the things that we mentioned a few months ago at the East Coast Gathering, when we talked about the transition into the mature soul era, was the fact that one of the tendencies that we see at soul age transitions, and it is particularly ramped up right now, and was probably epitomized the most during your January 6th so-called uprising at your American Capitol. But it's also underscored by the approximate 25 to 30% of the world population who actually questions the validity, or shall we say not the validity of vaccinations, but who questions the motive behind vaccinations. What has happened is at this transition period, it is quite common that in one of the things that needs to disintegrate for a soul age transition to happen is that, and people to take back their personal power, albeit it can be taking it back through the negative pole, acting out, being brutish, being willing to either comply or adhere to beliefs that they don't necessarily even understand, but the majority holds them, or their majority of their group holds them, and they feel safe in aligning themselves with those groups, is that they lose a sense of trust in whatever kind of authority is in their world. So one of the things that's, you know, of course, has happened, and is, and by the way, these trends, of course, just don't happen overnight. These are things that many of you have been seeing, you know, for a number of years now. But they're just making themselves evident, again, specifically in the fact that, you know, the so many claims and the belief that authority and authoritarianism is going to take away everyone's freedom, and that vaccination is just one of the ways that'll happen. It is those beliefs that are filled with a level of paranoia and fear, which is, of course, the partner to power mode. Caution mode is the partner to power mode that goes along with it. So they slide over there. Now, we've taken a sidestep a moment, just to be clear in this talk, and we're talking about a longer term trend that's more than just this year's overleaves. But we want to bring it to the forefront because it's important in a cynic year for you to say, all right, damn it, I'm using this to use my intellect and to, and if necessary, argue my way into finding what's true and what's bullshit. It's not to do so to take up sides. It's not to do so to pummel somebody else. It's not to do so to try and in some way become invulnerable. It's to do so to start taking apart the way that all the complicated messages of mass media and the underlying instinctive disintegration, then lending to paranoia and fear amongst individuals and then to groups, that all of you are feeling, or if you've heard us use the word Geigering to one degree or another. And all of you here as, you know, as older souls, all of whom have been in spiritual pursuits for at least, for many of you, decades, all of you are already developed empaths to a great degree. So you're already more susceptible to feeling the trends of mass population energy fields. Cynicism says, go headlong into breaking down any of your beliefs and really test them for their validity. Really test them for, you know, how well they stand up. Don't take, oh, well, it's just because I believe it's true. Don't stop there. go find out why you believe something is true, or the opposite, find out why when a group of people, whether it's those who perceive that there are microchips in the vaccine or what have you, go find out why that isn't true or why it could be true. Don't just rest on belief, because if you rest in belief, you rest in this assimilative fugue, this fog state of generalizations that are building on, this mass paranoia that becomes more and more easy to sustain if you're not challenging things, if you're not asking questions. And most importantly, the positive pole of cynics says, have a rousing conversation. Really go after and say, what do you think about this and why? Tell me what it means to you, not just the intellectual argument, but remember, in an instinctive center year, we're all four parts, because the instinctive center has four parts. It has essentially, or all seven parts, actually. It has the intellectual part of the instinctive center, which is your historic and even past life beliefs. It has your historical emotional part of the instinctive center, which has your traumas and affections and rejections of people that you've disliked and so forth from different times or different places. Your moving center, places that may have both either affinities, tastes, sensual preferences, or reactions towards various kinds of stimuli or sensation, or places, or ways of being, etc. Those of you who have a particular difficulty with, say just a simple example of a difficult taste of something you would otherwise like. Well, there's a good chance that it was installed by essence because it wanted you to preserve or at least deal with that dislike. And so it chose a selection of your genes to help put that into your individual unconscious in your DNA. And now is a chance when you can go pluck them out. Or at least, and this is what the other thing that cynicism allows you to do. Cynicism says, okay, maybe some of these things just are as they are. And if you now come up against them and you don't feel any resistance, even though you don't have an answer for it, if there's no resistance there within yourself, then it may be a chance and a time to finally come to peace with some of the areas or issues or things that you've had going on in yourself that maybe you didn't like. So you actually come to places at this time in your life where you just say, you know what, next lifetime or next lifetimes after that. Because as you've heard us say now on several occasions, we are advocating that all of you, for the remainder of your lives, focus on being in your human self. Let the afterlife and essence take care of itself. You do nothing morally wrong or spiritually incorrect or against your essence if you actually focus in on genuine self-love and self-care of your body, of those people you love, and of the place that loves you, called your environment. And that environment could be as little as the apartment you live in, cleaning it up, letting it be nurturing, changing the way that you eat so that you have as much real nourishment as you can, giving yourself the kind of exercise and nothing even grandiose, but just enough to make yourself feel vital and alive. All these are reprogramming your instinctive center so that the quality of your life for the rest of your days is better. And folks, the old adage is the truer one. That idea of if you live a good life, that is a model for other people. And that is a contribution to the world at large. And it becomes an example. Even if that example was just one other person. And from that example, then, it becomes a model. And from a model, it gets copied. And then another person begins to rearrange themselves as to have more self-care, more genuine and or clearer understanding of their needs, their wants, their basic intentionality. All of those things then get programmed into the remainder of your life as your spiritual, as your instinctive center begins to recongeal. But right now, for the remainder of this year, you're in process with it. It's not a decision that you just say, oh, now it's done. I've made up my mind. This is it. You're in process. Artisan year makes it very fluid. Growth year makes it very expansive. Instinctive center year makes it very deep. Cynic year says, go at it with that hammer. Because remember, you, those beautiful swords and those beautiful cutleries and those beautiful jewels all result when you put something under pressure. And what emerges from that pressure, what's left over, you know, are that as the beautiful results, that sure, solid thing after that. So, having given you some of the flavor then of the overleaves, we'll go ahead and we think we're just going to open it up to questions now and let you guys guide some of what you've heard and maybe ask some of what you want to know today about things. So I'm going to go here and where's your participants? There you are. And I'm going to see if I can invite you all to unmute, if that's correct, if that's the right way to do it. Or you can unmute yourselves. Okay, very good. So the lock is off. So Nan, you happen to come on first. Did you have a question? Oh, they froze there.
Okay. Listening to what it was said, increasing the server aspect of my creative life does not even see a path I can see. I spend an awful lot of time taking care of myself.
Yes.
It's not that I'm opposed to doing some sort of serving. I can't see where it fits in my life. And this was something that you talked about.
Yes. One thing about you, Nan, that we can say directly is your greatest service to people is you are always kind to them. And you are always considerate of them. And that in itself is a service. When we talked about people doing, you know, their recreation, what we mean is just being available to the world rather than being stuck in many of the world's leaders are stuck in greed right now and really stuck in the it's all about me mentality. With your life path, so much of it which has been about having to care for yourself, it's been a very ordinal and personally persevering lifetime for you. But what you have always brought to others has been kindness, generosity of spirit, and an ability to listen. You need to give nothing more than what you're doing now. When we said that about this year, talking about it as a trend for everyone, we were talking about the idea that, as you know, because you've certainly been around again in self-help and, you know, for so many years, you know, how many spins on personal growth lessons are there about, oh, become all you can be and get your prosperity. And in other words, all these self-oriented and often ego-indulgent things, right, that say, and don't worry, whatever happens to anybody else as a result of your doing, it must be perfect, you know, in some way, shape or form, right? Which, of course, is...
Yeah, it's never been my path.
Yeah, it's never been your path. Exactly. So, you know, we're giving you the checkered flag, dear. You just keep right on rolling. You're doing just great, just as you are. And there's no recreation you really need. If anything, for you, you have become more at ease. Ironically, of course, not exactly enjoyably, but certainly in a way that has actually been beneficial to you in the last year and a half. Granted, isolation has not been the funnest for you, but you've been able to create a space around you where you live and pursue projects and not be taxed by any kind of outside work or anything, so that it has ultimately raised your vibration and your sense of well-being. And as we said, when any individual raises their sense of well-being and does so in a way that opens their field through to generosity, to goodwill, to kindness, and which you do with just even interacting is perhaps as little as you do. But of course, right now you're on a cross-country whirlwind rock concert tour of sharing goodwill. So just know you saved it all up and now you're spreading the love, dear. So in any case, don't worry, it's not more work for you, is what we want you to know.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's next? We'll go back to gallery view here. Okay, so Barbara and then Pauline and then Russ. Barbara Taylor?
So I have a question about the impact of all the people who have died from COVID. It's a lot. It's millions and millions and millions of people around the world, but is it a significant enough people leaving to have a major impact on the rest of us? I know there's grief, there's societal impacts, there's economic impacts. I'm just curious if it's what the impacts are of that many people leaving within a fairly short period of time, or is there anything?
That's a very thoughtful question. So as we let it ponder a little bit, according to the statistics that we're familiar with, it's been about 4.5 million people who've died, but it's been well over almost 200 million who have been infected worldwide. And in a way, Barbara, infection rate has probably been more significant number than deaths. You hear that, and the reason being is because people who have been infected and survived tell their friends, oh my God, I wish I would have gotten the vaccine. Oh my God, this is horrible. Oh my God, I almost died. Oh my, and then it begins to filter out. So in other words, the living representatives tend to spread the message more effectively than the, for want of a better term, those who have, died and, and almost become, if you will, martyrs to the pandemic. The critical mass of that is such that, and it's going to ramp up again. I mean, infection rates now that are starting to take off again because the Delta variant is so much more rapidly infectious. And of course, what it'll also do is it will serve up to, and it's been interesting because we've seen trends of defectors from the other side, so to speak, who are terribly ashamed to admit to their friends that they secretly got a vaccine because they don't want their friends to know that they gave in, and secretly believe, well, just maybe it was actually for real. And that kind of thing, is on one side of the equation. And we want to speak to that because it also begs a different thing. In the United States and Europe, they have a very unique problem that's not true for most of the rest of the world. For people to be able to have the personal choice and freedom to not take the vaccine is really quite a privilege. I mean, in many third world countries and or struggling economies, they are, and if you'll forgive it, we don't mean just a pun, dying for enough vaccines because people are, susceptible to not only COVID, but a whole number of things that can come on top of being ill. You know, as you know, and we've had this discussion in groups before about the secondary effects of the weakening immune system after COVID has hit it. You know, the long-term COVID cases is kind of what it's being kind of sort of conventionally called now. It just opens people up to a whole lot of other systemic problems over the long term. And people in other countries who even already have less healthcare, you know, are just dying for this. So Americans who willfully and willingly say, well, I don't want it, it really shows part of the difficulty of being in a prosperous society, that the negative pole of greed, of no, this is mine and I'm not going to do it, can have on people. Wow. So we actually think that, you know, pandemics are going to be with the human race, Barbara, for probably the next 3 to 10 years. For one thing, COVID, as the SARS virus and this string of variants that are coming out of it, are going to continue to diversify over the course of the next few years. Some more virulent than others. And what it will do is it will spur the production of different kinds of vaccines that will continue to cover. So in other words, the spread will happen, but the death rate will eventually begin to kind of level off. But here's what also happens. You recall last year when we first talked about COVID, we said for this to become real to people is they have to have an experience of it themselves. That was the mantra. And because, you know, there are many people who say, well, I haven't got it, so it must not be real. And, you know, that's a bit of false reasoning, but it's a very surface level reasoning that you could say, yeah, you know, you go out in the sun and you don't get sunburned, so it doesn't mean you can't get sunburned, but, you know, et cetera, right? It's exposure. As people then have their exposure, they lose a loved one, or a loved one gets sick, they themselves get sick, somebody dies, or like that, the momentum toward the reality that of something bigger, that COVID is not just a disease that's affecting humans, but as they're hearing more and more, it's a disease that's going across species. And as it goes across species, and then the other animals spur on different kinds of variants and then reintroduce them back into the human genome, then people will begin to, first of all, do what they do right now, and that's have another round of freaking out. But if they use the cynic energy well, they'll confront it and say, okay, realistically, you know, how am I going to make it through this? And then decide for themselves based on more fact than allowing for more fiction. Does that answer your question, at least some parts of it?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, very good. April, you had your hand up next, and then Russ. I can't hear. Oh, there you go. Well, Pauline, that's April. April is Pauline's daughter. We're not hearing you, dear. So there must be something going on with your microphone. Maybe it's off. Doesn't look off, but. Tell you what, April, keep trying. I'm going to go to Russ so we keep the momentum going, okay? Russ, why don't you go ahead and ask your question?
It'll be a little bit more personal. There's mandates are going all over the place in a number of states. Every store and business here in Denver is requiring their staff to mask back up. I'm absolutely guilty with that being stuck inside feeling. And I was going to travel back to see some family because we just had, as you know, a death in the family. Is that smart at the moment?
It's the rates of infection amongst inoculated people is very low. It's about 10%. And for those who are inoculated, I mean, vaccinated like you are, even if you were to get exposed to some of these new variants, you would probably get only a minor case. So is it, when you ask it, it's a logical question, and it's a good, precautionary, thought. Actually, we get for you, Russ, that this is necessary for you. Essence isn't particularly interested in having you infected or getting kicked out of this place. And you know, as we've said before, that doesn't mean that the Tao won't overrule it with the overguiding principle of the physical plane called randomness and chance. Okay. You know, essence is just a tiny smidge of the Tao, but the Tao is all of creation working. On the positive side, what's interesting about an instinctive center period like this, Russ, and some of you have probably experienced some of this, is that what you generally, the personality generally calls luck, is up for a lot of people. So if you have been experiencing a vibration that feels open, loving, and truthful, notice those are all three, truth, love, and energy, said a different way. If you're in that and not holding beliefs in place, but allowing yourself to be present, what you'll be amazed to see is how many enjoyable, wonderful things can be attracted in these experiences. And again, we call them, and again, it's commonly called luck. But what we're calling it is we're just saying that it's unplanned attraction that essences are going through in an instinctive center time, rearranging all its parts, especially rearranging its parts during an artisan year. So for you, we get a green light for you to travel and, of course, take your necessary precautions. Even when you have to stay in, in motels or what have you, just do the basics. We don't see you as being in a particularly susceptible place physically either. So that's our feedback on that personal question.
That's what I was feeling.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
I mean, we don't suggest that you go maskless and lick countertops in restaurants.
But Stephen, you're taking all of the fun out of it.
Well, just so you were warned. All right. Are you there? Are you there, April?
Thank you, Michael.
Okay. No, can't hear you still. I'll tell you what, April, try this. Go into the chat section and type your question, and then we'll go ahead and answer it that way. Anyone else have a question? Bruce. Your mic is off. Turn on your microphone. Maybe. Let's see if I can ask to unmute. Let's see if that helps you at all.
Thank you.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
Just briefly, an artist year. Yes. And then you mentioned artisan year, and then you mentioned the feminine aspect of expanding in all directions. This is a time where I have to write, and I've been so distracted that this could be an excuse, but it's both reality.
Yes, and both truths are true, Bruce. It's okay. Both truths are true. It's not either or.
Yeah. Thank you. But last weekend I went to Mount Shasta for a little retreat, and boy, the energy and everything. And so I got inspired to write. But I'm going yin and yang. I'm going, oh, I want to explode. I want to, you know, and it's too much. It's out of balance. And then I go yin and get discouraged. So what is a protocol, a practical concept that you have that I don't, in terms of creativity, artistically expanding, but having that, what did you call it? Persistence or perseverance?
Perseverance. Yes. Yeah. Well, and so for you, I mean, you literally, it will start with you just, you are really good at your meditative practices already. So as part of your meditative practice, we would say, make sure you sit down for 15 minutes and just write anything. It could be row your boat gently down the stream, you know, and then let the your own creation of sentences come out from there.
Okay.
And that's number one. The other thing too, Bruce, that may surprise you, what we're about to say, is we would suggest to you, you get yourself you can find them at Staples or Aaron Brothers Art Mart or something like that, like an 18 by 24 inch drawing tablet. You know, the kind that has the just kind of paper on, and use that to both draw, write. If you have paints, literally, or colored markers or colored pencils, and allow yourself, in other words, to communicate on a big space in a way that isn't confined and doesn't limit you to having to just force out full sentences.
That clicked. Thank you.
Certainly.
That's a great, great idea. Thank you.
Certainly. You're welcome. Yeah. And because the more you can allow, because feminine energy and artisan energy both tend to have a non-linear progression to them. And it's that non-linear quality that is, you know, many people are find difficult because you live in a culture that it demands such linearity and so forth. So.
That's right. Thank you. Very good.
Does that answer your question then?
Yes. Thank you. Very good.
Okay. Good. All right. So now we're going to take the question from Pauline and April. Question one is, the variant from the permafrost is the one coming in 2022. We'll answer that one. Okay, so many of you have heard that in Siberia, in parts of Alaska, and even in the North Polar regions, in Scandinavia, permafrost is melting. And in the permafrost, there are three things that the world needs to be concerned about. Number one is the release of Paleolithic viruses and bacteria into the atmosphere. Many of those will be, and this is number two, put in check because the thing that is actually worse for global climate change now bringing in, instead of disease, climate change and its effects, is the fact that the permafrost contains huge, huge quantities of methane. Frozen methane that has otherwise been held in stasis for literally, 100,000 years. And putting that into the atmosphere is, worse than tripling the cars that drive now. And the good news is that that's not ever going to happen. Humanity has figured out that number one, not everybody can afford a car anymore. Number two, at least there have been some movements and successful ones to do hybrids and electric cars, but there have also been more mass migrations to cities and investments in public transit systems. So with all that, what's being released out of the permafrost, the methane and then bacteria and viruses, are a second to it. The coronavirus that will be coming next isn't one that's going to be coming directly from the permafrost. Some of the viruses that we see there are liable to have antigenic problems probably by the end of the decade or into the 2030s. They've got to make their way down, in other words, into the lower latitudes. And the prevailing winds aren't going to bring them down that fast. So those aren't the issues that those diseases aren't the ones that are really to be. I mean, they're of concern and they will eventually have their effect. We don't want to minimize them. But as far as a time scale or a timeline is concerned, they're not immediate. The second question is, many walk-ins coming in, wonder if there is a collective purpose and or exchange for those leaving, allowing those for walk-ins to come. That's an interesting question. Different sources have said different things about the amount or number of walk-ins. If somebody has got their Bruce, perhaps you could mute yourself. It looks like it might be coming from your background. Thank you. Anyway, we don't really see that there's going to be, say, an increase in the number of walk-ins any more than there has been over, say, the last 30 years. But the phenomena of walk-in where there is soul sharing or soul exchange has been very prevalent because there's been a lot more people who have wanted to come down to the earth and didn't want to get into the birth process. Then there's been a lot of people who produced a body, got through their lessons in 30, 40 years, and basically are sitting around on their thumbs twiddling and kind of going, okay, well, what do I do with the rest of my life? And their consciousness, it's not everyone by any stretch on that in this category, but in persons in that situation, it happens that an essence can come in. It can feel like often a dream guide. It can often feel like it can be an essence twin, but it might be, another aspect of your own self at times coming in and saying, all right, I'm going to kind of lead the body. Now, for people, a lot of people will experience as the dominate, the takeover of a certain sub-personality. That would come in, but there's going to be, you've heard the term ride sharing, we imagine in the idea of literally carpooling. Well, in a way, walk-ins can have that effect. A complete exchange isn't as commonplace. What we see is, in fact, is an actuality. There's another baby boom that has been going on for the last 7 years. And in the next 10 years, there's also going to be a considerable dying off of, an older generation, as well as a part of a generation that is, that is going through these pandemics. And in that regard, there's a lot of souls that are leaving that are going to take a hiatus. And a lot of the new souls coming in either haven't been here for a while, or they're ones that, well, some of them are going to be you guys, not you guys necessarily on this call, but you baby boomers who really helped to mess things up. You baby boomers came in, as a collective generation with very, very high ideals. And somewhere around the late 70s, early 80s, you say, well, I'll screw it. I'm going to make my fortune and forget everybody else. And of course, instead of helping to fix some of the problems, which were just starting to come into play then, the acceleration just went and, right now you've hit the cliff. So in any case, that's our comment about, walk-ins in general and the fact that we're not seeing necessarily more of them at the time. Okay, so I think Catherine Rose was next, and then Phil Fauché.
In regard to the vaccines, I've been studying, being a scholar, I've been studying everything really closely, during this whole pandemic.
Yeah.
And my husband and I, right now, we've chosen to go the route of taking ivermectin. Because there's a whole myriad, a lot of reasons that we've all heard as far as the current vaccines. The one coming up in the future, Novavax, that sounds, much more attractive as far as having, less side effects and the ADE and just being so new and being so unknown. So that's where we are. We're not anti-vax. It's just a safe, effective vaccine is what we're waiting for.
Good, good. That's, you know, it's, we don't even have criticism necessary for the anti-vaxxers if they make an informed choice. The thing that we're seeing is the production of mass psychosis. And it started before the pandemic. You know, and the in a way, anti-vaxxing is an outgrowth of a whole series of misinformations, disinformations, fear-based disintegration of trusts, some of which, as we said, are endemic to this soul age transition. Your investigations and your decisions on that, and knowing the risks of doing it and not doing it, is what is, you know, if for yourself anyway, is what makes it much more likely that you're going to still radiate from choice and not fear. People say often fear is a choice, but what we often say is on the physical plane, fear is an animal bred reaction. And you have aspects of your body, the amygdala, your reticular activating system, the long nerve that goes down. I forgot the name of it. The vagus nerve that goes all the way down into your gut, you know, for gut feelings and that sort of thing. You're part animal. You're wired for fear. It's not a bad thing. It's what you do, what one does with it. And right now, what's happening is, you know, we're seeing a stampede, trampling a lot of useful things and circumstances and heading for a cliff and pushing the world with it. And so it's how one deals with fear. And what the cynic says is, challenge it, challenge it, challenge it. And you've just said that you have, in studying this, you've made reasonable decisions, including understanding what your next likely choices are, instead of just turning a blind eye and having no knowledge of why you're making your decision, except for conformity. And that conformity is what we're talking about, is what spurs mass psychosis. Is people say, oh my God, all these people around me are running and they're shouting, I better run and shout too. And it overrides individual choice. And it also picks up momentum. And that's what, that's what happens in, that kind of collective empathy transfer in that regard. So, well, stay healthy. Until what you want comes out.
Yeah. Thank you, Dads.
Yeah. All right. Let's see.
Stay away from sick people.
What's that? Oh, Phil, you're in. Oh, Russ was saying something. What's that, Russ?
Let's stay away from sick people.
Yeah, yeah. That's true too. Phil, you're next.
Yeah. Hi. You probably can't see me very well. I was in your introduction, I was really taken by your comments about how we should live our lives in our body and taking care of ourselves.
Yes.
And I recognize that there's a lot of spiritual practices now that are about embodiment. So it's just more of a comment I wanted to bring forward, but that seems to be happening.
That's good, because embodiment is living with your emotions, is living with your animal, and true embodiment will always require meaningful self-care. And when we say meaningful self-care, we mean just that. You get enough sleep, you get the right kind of nutrition. If you're going to use recreational drugs or alcohol, you know, you do them in proper amounts at proper times, continuously as a way of life. Binge eating or binge watching television. One of the things that we said is one of the healthiest things you could all do right now is, you know, turn off your computer. Granted, you might want to finish the rest of this presentation, but go read a book. Because it generates one of the things that is so positive about reading a book, whether it's a novel, whether it's you can read a textbook, it doesn't matter. It activates your internal visual imagination. your cortex for discovery takes over, and you literally begin creating yourself. Your own imagination creates the words off the page. Whereas when you're watching a video screen, it's all passive. It's all input. And not only that, but it's often distraction, and there's no contemplation. And without contemplation, there is no thought. And without thought, there is no ability to critique it. And as you might guess from the word, critique meaning the key word in critical thinking. See, that's another thing about the cynic, is that people have gotten afraid and misconstrued the idea of critique with criticism meaning attack. And it's unfortunate, because that has become so blended in many people's minds that they just hear the word and they get fearful. And then they want to push it away and not do it. And we're saying useful critique is wonderful. You can learn lots of things. And it's also an inventive process in its own right, because you're coming up with new thoughts and ideas and potential discoveries that weren't there for you before.
Yeah. That's good in an artisan year.
And it's great in an artisan year. And that's why the Tao decided to spin an artisan year in this particular period, is to say, okay, everybody, let's get your whiteboard. Go ahead and erase a bunch of parts. And the stuff that's really hard to erase, take your cynic and really get into it. And if it stays, then maybe you ought to leave it there. But otherwise, get in there and maybe move a few things around. Maybe that little image that's down in the right corner needs to go in the left corner. Or maybe you need to expand upon that. Or maybe you need to do some more drawing. Or maybe you just stand back and look at your whiteboard and go, huh, this is pretty cool. Maybe I could live like this for the rest of my life, and it's okay. Because for many of you old souls, especially you, your spiritual adherents who were in self-deprecation or martyrdom or self-destruction particularly, but arrogance to a degree too. Arrogance just tries to kind of block it. But all of those key features, you know, usually say, there's something wrong with me. I've got to be fixed. I'm not okay. I'm less than. I should feel ashamed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if you could actually come to acceptance with yourself just as you are, that would be milestones for many of you. And then guess what? Suddenly one of your daily activities would go away. Beating yourself up, criticizing yourself, worrying about what other people think of you. Think of how much time you'd reclaim. And we mean that all quite seriously, even though you see us smiling, because it's humorous in the abstract, but personally, it's obviously been very painful for many of you. So thank you, Phil, for bringing that up. Who's next? Have we just dazzled you so wonderfully? Oh, thank you. All right, well, we're going to make a few other comments that we want to talk about, because we think they bear some general statement about. One of the things that you can look at when you is, you know, we told you in the presentation in April to start becoming aware of systems thinking. And we said that because the world has got, for everyone really, the world has gotten bigger and there's more knowledge out there. And it's things are no longer black and white. No, you can't take things as a yes, no binary anymore. There are many layers going on at the same time of everything. And why we say that is because, you know, in this period when you're using your critical thinking skills through the cynic attitude to really, you know, hammer away and see what falls apart under scrutiny and is, you know, nonsense and pitch it away. Part of the thing that we want you to realize is it's piece at a time. It's not all or nothing. It's not like you're going to set down truth in the stone and have it all just now there. It's going to come one layer or one part of a bigger whole at a time. But you need to be able to identify the entire whole. So we're going to give you a really powerful example of what we mean. when we talk about the instinctive center, let's talk about the instinctive center of the entire planet Earth. And you know the instinctive center of the entire planet Earth as its four main elements, often used by metaphysicians: earth, fire, water, and air. Now, if you were to take that into the, you know, Japanese system where they use, you know, metal and wood, that even expands it a little further, and wind instead of air. But they're all similar because these are basic foundational elements in the world itself that you are seeing in disintegration in their own right. You're seeing not only fires in the West in the United States, you're seeing them in South America, you're seeing them in Canada, you're seeing them in Greece, you're seeing them in Siberia, you're seeing them in different places in Africa. You're seeing, you know, the earth being just ripped up right now with the last onslaught of the last 5 years of extraction of oil, precious minerals, and so forth. And what is happening, and even though it hasn't gotten much press, there are more earthquakes happening around the globe and bigger ones. Why? Well, when you start taking out, you know, trillions of gallons of liquid, essentially lubricant, between, you know, large geological structures, suddenly it's a big gap. And that open gap is going to shift. And things then crunch together. Also, what you face is you see Earth on its surface with the rampant abuse of Earth soils with farming practices and pesticides and chemical fertilizers. This year, too, you've also seen water in play. And of course, that was most notably seen in the floods in Germany, as far as popular press is concerned. But where it's actually worse is in the droughts across major parts of the world, and in the fact that in much of sub-Saharan Africa and sub-equatorial South America, and even in Australia and Southeast Asia, there is not just a shortage of water from droughts, but there is a critical freshwater shortage, and it's being made worse by economic hoarding. And then the last one we want to mention, of course, is air. And all you have to do, for those of you who live in almost any part of the northern hemisphere these days, is just look up, and all the gains that actually were made from the late 70s, when air pollution standards were enacted, are now starting to be reversed because of the fact, not of cars so much, even though cars are a factor, but because of the amount of fires and the amount of methane that is being released into the atmosphere. So it's important to note, because when you look at the Earth as a system, all four of its major elemental forces are all showing you its displeasure, or shall we at least say, even if we don't put a value-oriented spin on it like that, but say at least it's disruption right before your very eyes. And that will continue. I mean, the best you can do as far as your individual self-cares, of course, is literally to do everything that you can do for your own person, but to participate as much as you can and keep in using water as sparingly as you can and as wisely as you can. Helping your earth, you know, for those of you who have gardens, by doing it as organically as you can. Don't kill things. You know, every insect ever created by the Tao has a purpose. It's not just for your inconvenience. The question is how to work with them and help mitigate them, and then begin to talk about that as both an example and as a person who communicates it. Because it is this kind of thing, because human beings are the apex species here. You're not the apex predator, believe it or not. You are the apex destroyer. And we want to make that distinction. You know, like out of the Wizards of Oz, lions and tigers and bears, they're apex predators. They and sharks and crocodiles, because they can kill a human with their bodies like that. Humans can't kill any of those animals like that. However, humans with their cars and their guns and their poisons and their thoughtlessness and their collective expanding and taking up all the resources can. So to anything that you can do that can increase your own personal consciousness and conscientiousness about how you interact with your own little world first, but then just how you interact with others interacting with their world can have that ripple effect and possibly get people out of the negative pole of artisan, which is that self-deception, which of course activates also the artisan chief feature down the column of self-destruction, which is currently the major trajectory that humankind has set itself onto. So we just wanted to mention that as a way that you contribute to the reset of the blueprint of the human race as you usher in the mature soul era, is by doing it primarily by your behavior, by your demonstration, by your modeling, and contributing your time, your energy, and your participation with those, and your support with those who do that as well. So, any other questions tonight? How often do you have, these are quarterly, Pauline and April, and I send these out in the quarterly newsletter that I have. It just so happens, you know, you caught me on by telephone the other day and apparently hadn't gotten my newsletter. So I've got your new email address in there and you'll be, and okay, April, I see yours now. So I'll put yours in there as well. So you should be seeing it the next time the newsletter comes out announcing one of these. Catherine, I see your hand up still. Catherine Rose, is it a new question or is it from last time still? It's okay if it's a new question. I just wanted to know. Oh, your microphone's off. Okay. Okay, awesome. Thank you. All right. Anyone else have questions this evening? Yes, Jean.
I do have a question about I have a particular interest in the infinite soul and the transcendental soul. And do you have any information about those guys coming up soon or?
Well, the infinite soul and the transcendental soul isn't going to show up in the same way that it did before. There's going to be lots of transcendental souls and lots of infinite souls. Because never before in the history of the world have you had so many people in need of so many messages. And no one gets airtime enough. We've talked about, for instance, you know, one of the ones that we've seen is Greta Thunberg. She's looking to us. There's debate amongst the channels whether she's going to manifest a transcendental soul or manifest infinite soul. It still remains to be seen. Point is, you can tell these people by the scope of their messages and how much reverberation. I mean, and right now in the modern era, how much controversy does it cause? Especially if they're not a very, you know, notorious person. Greta Thunberg is, you know, a 17-year-old teenager. And yet when she's made statements over the last few years, it's rippled throughout the planet. Why? Because she's got those, you know, she's got this collective soul behind her rippling through people's higher centers, hearing these other messages. And then, of course, it raises the opposites, the principle of opposites, which was so classic, you know, to see Donald Trump, you know, be so, you know, vociferously anti, and fighting her as if she was an equal. And her winning, just because she's looking at him going, are you really that big a chump? You know, I mean, really? I'm 17. I know what I'm saying is true. And, you know, but the fact it would rile him, because it, the messages will rile persons and institutions that are based on either untenable or false premises or destructive ones. So they're coming. So they're in the works. They're happening now. You may not have seen them or heard them all. But most of them are in their teens and 20s. They really came in right in the late 90s, most of them, early 2000s. You know, and of course, transcendental souls and infinite souls are not born per se. Their vessels and their agreements are born with them, and then, you know, they attract in the entity or plane of existence to speak through them. So those carriers, but that's a really, really specialized agreement, really specialized. But still, there's a lot more that, you know, will be coming. You know, and there's within this teaching, you know, many of us concluded that when we saw Nelson Mandela, we concluded that he manifested a transcendental soul. You know, in his from the time that of his last years after, actually, he left the presidency. You know, he became such a world ambassador. And you said the name Mandela, and it was as if somebody was speaking a benediction, you know, into the room. And that's the kind of effect you can look for, you know, and it's universal. I mean, there's even those who vehemently disliked Nelson Mandela absolutely respected his power. Because it was that enormous, you know, and we give you that as an example. Same thing with Martin Luther King, you know, his most vehement enemies at the time, you know, and for years after he died, even said, yeah, you know, he was powerful. So as an example.
Thank you.
Certainly. So anyone else? Well, then, okay, since we're not seeing anyone jump, and we believe then we've probably dazzled you into stupefaction for the evening, we will simply say that we will be back with you again near the end of the year, probably around in November, where we'll talk about the remainder of the year and the progress of things. At that point. And then, of course, as always, in January, we'll talk about the year for 2022. In the meantime, thank you, everyone, for coming. And as always, we hope that's been of use to you.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Michael.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Steve and Michael.
And by the way, for those of you who want to listen to this again, it'll be available on the website sometime this week or next, you know, for download or for re-listening. So, all right, everyone, have a good night. Thank you all very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good night.
Hugs.
Hugs, everybody.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.